Minsa cursed into her laptop, not recognizing Kitty Pong in the live video feed of the auction. After a long day of heli-skiing in the Caucasus Mountains, her muscles ached, and this auction was delaying her much-needed soak in the gigantic sunken tub of their winter chalet.
"What's the price up to now?"
Colin asked drowsily as he lay stretched out on the black and white yak skin rug by the fireplace.
"I'm not telling. I know you're not going to approve."
"No. Really, Minty? How much is it?"
"Shh! I'm bidding,"
Araminta admonished her husband, resuming her dialogue with the Christie's associate on the line. Colin pulled himself up from the cozy rug and padded over to the desk where his wife was set up with her computer and satellite phone. He blinked twice at the video feed, not sure if he believed what he was seeing.
"Li Xiaowa,
Hokkien Fo, are you out of your mind?
You really going to pay 90 million for a bunch of old scrolls?"
Araminta gave him a look.
"I don't say anything when you buy huge ugly canvases with elephant dung on them. So don't you start on me now."
"Wait a minute. My Chris Ophelis only cost about 2-3 million each.
Think about how many elephant dung paintings we could buy." Araminta cupped her hand over the mouthpiece.
"Make yourself useful and get me another hot chocolate. With extra marshmallows, please. This auction isn't over until I say it's over."
"Where are you even going to hang them? We have no more wall space left in the house," Colin continued.
"You know, I think they would go splendidly in the lobby of the new hotel my mother's building in Bhutan." "Bloody hell! The bitch in black isn't giving up. Who the hell is she? She looks like a Chinese Dieter Von Teese."
Colin shook his head. "Minty, you're getting too emotional. Hand me the phone. I'll do the bidding if you really want it that bad. I have much more experience with this than you do. The most important thing is to set your limit. What's your top limit?"
Cold Storage, Jalita, Singapore, 8:35 p.m. Astrid Leong was at the supermarket when her phone rang. She was trying to cobble together a meal for the cook's night off tomorrow, and her 5-year-old son, Cassian, was standing in the front section of the cart doing his best impression of Leonardo DiCaprio on the prow of the Titanic. As always, Astrid was a little mortified to use her phone in a public place, but seeing that it was her cousin Oliver Sien calling from Hong Kong, it couldn't be helped. She steered the cart toward the frozen vegetable section and took the call.
"What's up?"
"You're missing all the fun at the auction of the year," Oliver reported gleefully.
"Oh, was that today? So tell me, what's the damage?"
"It's still going. You're not going to believe this, but Kitty Pong made quite the entrance and has been bidding up the painting like there's no tomorrow."
"Kitty Pong?"
"Yes. In a Madame X cocktail dress with two borzois on diamond leashes. It's quite the spectacle."
"When did she become an art collector? Is Bernard there? I didn't think he spent his money on anything but drugs and boats."
"Bernard is nowhere to be seen. But if Kitty succeeds in acquiring this painting, they will immediately be considered the top collectors of Asian art in the world."
"I am missing out on all the fun."
"So it's down to Kitty, Araminta Lee, some mainland couple that Corinna Kotong is bidding for, and the Getty Museum. We're up to 94 million on the painting. I know you didn't set a limit, but I just want to be sure you want to keep going."
94? Keep going.
"Cassian, stop playing with those frozen peas."
"It's 96 now. Oops, holy Mary, mother of God. We've just broken 100 million.
Bid?"
"Sure."
"The mainlanders have finally dropped out. Poor things, they look like they've just lost their firstborn child. We're at 105.
Cassian, I don't care how much you beg. I'm not letting you eat microwavable mini sliders. Think of all the preservatives in that beef. Put them back.
This is Guinness Book territory here, Astrid. No one has ever paid this much for a Chinese painting. 110, 115, it's Araminta against Kitty. Keep going.
Cassian was trapped inside the ice cream freezer. Astrid stared at her child in exasperation.
I have to go. Just get it. As you said, this is something the museum ought to have, so I don't really care what I have to pay.
10 minutes later, as Astrid stood in line at the checkout counter, her phone rang again. She smiled apologetically at the cashier as she took the call.
Sorry to bother you again, but we're at 195 million now. Your bid.
Oliver said, sounding a bit frazzled.
Really?
Astrid said, as she snatched away the Mars bar that Cassian was trying to hand to the cashier.
Yes, the Getty dropped out at 150, and Araminta at 180. It's just you against Kitty, and it looks like she's hell-bent on having it. At this point, I can't in good conscience recommend it. I know Charling at the museum would be horrified to find out you paid this much.
She'll never know. I'm giving it anonymously.
Even so.
Astrid, I know it's not about the money, but at this price, we're in idiot territory.
How annoying. You're right. 195 million is just silly. Let Kitty Pong have it if she wants it that badly,
Astrid said. She fished a stack of Super Saver coupons out of her purse and presented them to the cashier. 30 seconds later, the gavel went down on the Palace of 18 Perfections. At 195 million, it was the most expensive Chinese work of art ever sold at auction. The glittering crowd burst into deafening applause as Kitty Pong preened for the cameras, the flashes going off like IEDs in downtown Kabul. One of the Russian wolfhounds started to bark. Now the whole world would know that Kitty Pong, or Mrs. Bernard Tai, as she now insisted on being called, had indeed arrived.
Chapter 2. Cupertino, California. February 9, 2013. Chinese New Year's Eve.
The boys are back from their football game. Steer clear of Jason. He's going to be one giant sweat rag.
Samantha Chu warned her cousin Rachel as soon as she heard the boisterous echoes coming from the garage.
The two of them were perched on wooden stools in the kitchen of Rachel's Uncle Walt and Auntie Jin, making dumplings for the Chinese New Year's Eve feast. Samantha's 21-year-old brother came bursting through the screen door ahead of Nicholas Young.
"We made the Lin brothers eat dirt,"
Jason triumphantly announced, grabbing two Gatorades from the fridge and tossing one to Nick.
"Hey, where'd the parentals go? I expected to find more hysterical aunties fighting over kitchen counter space."
"Dad's picking up great Auntie Louise from the retirement home, and Mom, Auntie Flora, and Auntie Carrie went to 99 Ranch," Samantha reported.
"Again? Glad I didn't get roped into driving them this time. That place is always so packed with fobbies."
A nickname for fresh-off-the-boat Asian immigrants, used mainly by second, third, or fourth generation Asian Americans to denote their superiority.
"The parking lot looks like a Toyota dealership. What did they run out of this time?" Jason asked.
"Everything. Uncle Ray called. He's bringing the whole family after all, and you know how much those boys can eat,"
Samantha said as she scooped some minced pork and chai filling onto a dough wrapper and handed it off to Rachel.
"Get ready, Jace. I'm sure Auntie Belinda's going to say something about your new tattoo,"
Rachel teased as she folded little pleats on the top of the dumpling and molded it into a perfect crescent shape.
"Who's Auntie Belinda?" Nick inquired.
Jason made a face.
"Dude, you haven't met her yet, have you? She's Uncle Ray's wife. Uncle Ray is this mega bucks oral surgeon, and they have this huge McMansion in Menlo Park. So Auntie Belinda acts like she's the queen of Downtown Abbey. She's insanely uptight, and every year she drives Mom nuts by waiting till the very last minute to decide whether she and her spalt-rotten kids will grace us with their presence."
"It's Downton Abbey, Jace," Samantha corrected. And come on, she's not that bad. She's just from Vancouver, that's all.
You mean Hongkoover, Jason retorted, tossing his empty bottle from across the kitchen into the oversized Bed Bath & Beyond plastic bag on the pantry door that served as the recycling bin. Auntie Belinda's gonna love you, Nick, especially when she hears you speak like that dude from Notting Hill.
By 6:30, 22 members of the extended Chu clan had arrived at the house. Most of the older uncles and aunties sat around the big rosewood dining table that was covered in thick protective plastic sheeting, while the younger adults sat with the children at three folding mahjong tables that spilled out into the living room. The teens and college-age Chus were spread out in front of the big-screen television in the den, watching basketball and gobbling down fried pot stickers by the dozen. As the aunties began bringing out the heaping platters of roast duck, jumbo shrimp deep-fried in batter, steamed gailan with black mushrooms, and Chinese long-life noodles with barbecued pork and scallops, Auntie Jin looked around at the gathered crowd.
Ray is still not here? We're not waiting any longer or the food will get cold.
Auntie Belinda is probably still trying to decide which Chanel dress to wear, Samantha quipped.
Just then, the doorbell rang, and Ray and Belinda Chu swept into the house with their four teenage sons, all sporting Ralph Lauren polo shirts in different hues. Belinda wore high-waisted cream silk trousers, an iridescent orange blouse with billowing organza sleeves, her trademark Chanel gold belt, and a pair of oversized champagne pole earrings more appropriate for the opening night of the San Francisco Opera.
Happy New Year, everyone! Uncle Ray announced jovially as he presented his eldest brother Walt with a big box of Japanese pears, while his wife ceremoniously handed Auntie Jin a covered Le Creuset dish.
Would you mind warming this up for me in the oven? Just 115 degrees for 20 minutes.
Hiya. You didn't have to bring anything, Auntie Jin said.
No, no, this is my dinner. I'm on a raw food diet now, Belinda announced.
When everyone had finally settled into their seats and begun attacking the dishes with gusto, Uncle Walt beamed across the table at Rachel.
I'm still not used to seeing you at this time of the year. You usually only come back for Thanksgiving.
It worked out because Nick and I had to deal with some last-minute wedding stuff, Rachel explained.
Auntie Belinda suddenly exclaimed imperiously,
Rachel Chu, I can't believe I've been here 10 minutes and you still haven't shown me your engagement ring. Get over here right now.
Rachel got up from her seat and walked toward her aunt dutifully, stretching out her hand for inspection.
My, it's so pretty, Auntie Belinda remarked in a shrill voice, barely concealing her surprise.
Wasn't this Nick fellow supposed to come from money? How did poor Rachel get saddled with this little pebble? It couldn't have been more than a carat and a half.
It's just a simple ring, exactly what I wanted, Rachel said modestly, eyeing the huge marquee-cut rock on her aunt's finger.
Yes, it's very simple, but it suits you perfectly, Auntie Belinda pronounced. Wherever did you find a ring like this, Nick? Is it from Singapore?
My cousin Astrid helped me. It's from her friend Joel in Paris, Nick answered politely.
Joel Arthur Rosenthal, a.k.a. Jar of Paris, whose precious handmade jewels are among the most coveted in the world. If Belinda had a more discerning eye, she might have realized that Rachel's ring was a flawless oval-cut diamond held in place by ribbons of white gold almost as thin as hairs interwoven with tiny blue sapphires. Nick would not tell Rachel how much he paid for it.
Imagine going all the way to Paris for this, Auntie Belinda murmured.
Hey, didn't you get engaged in Paris? Rachel's older cousin Vivian, who lived in Malibu, excitedly cut in. I think my mom told me something about a troupe of mimes performing at your proposal.
Mimes? Nick gave Vivian a look of horror.
I assure you, no mimes were ever involved. Hiya, then tell us the whole story, Auntie Jin cajoled.
Nick glanced over at Rachel. Why don't you take this one? You tell it much better. Rachel took a deep breath as everyone around the table looked at her expectantly.
Okay, here goes. On the last night of our Paris trip, Nick arranged a surprise dinner. He wouldn't tell me where we were going, so I had a feeling something was up. We ended up at this beautiful historic residence on an island in the middle of the Seine.
The Hotel Lambert, right at the tip of the Île Saint-Louis, Nick offered.
Yes, and there was a candlelit table for two set up on the roof. The moonlight was reflecting off the river. A cellist sat in the corner playing Debussy. Everything was just perfect. Nick had hired this French-Vietnamese chef from one of Paris's top restaurants to prepare the most exquisite meal. But I was so nervous, I completely lost my appetite.
In retrospect, a six-course tasting menu was probably not the best idea, Nick mused.
Rachel nodded. Every time the waiter lifted the silver dome from a dish, I thought I'd find a ring underneath. But nothing happened. By the time the dinner was over and the cellist began packing up her stuff, I thought, I guess tonight's not the night. But then, as we were about to leave, we heard these horns coming from the river. It was one of those bateau-mouche tourist barges, and all these people were assembled on the top deck. As the barge passed below the building, music started blaring out of the loudspeakers, and people started leaping on the benches like gazelles. Turns out they were from the Paris Opera Ballet, and Nick had commissioned them to perform a special dance just for me.
How lovely! Auntie Belinda gasped, finally impressed.
And after that, did Nick propose?
No. The performance ended, and we began to descend the staircase. I was still on a high from seeing this amazingly choreographed performance, but a bit disappointed that it didn't end in a proposal. So when we got downstairs, the street was deserted except for a guy standing under a tree overlooking the river. Then the guy started playing his guitar, and I recognized it was the Talking Heads. This must be the place. The song that we had heard a street musician performing in Washington Square Park on the first night we met. The guy began to sing, and I suddenly realized it was the very same guy from the park. Shut up! Samantha clasped both hands to her mouth as everyone in the room continued to listen in rapt attention.
Nick had somehow tracked the singer down all the way in Austin and had flown him to Paris. He no longer had blonde dreads, but I could never forget that voice. Then before I knew what was happening, Nick was down on one knee, staring up at me with a little velvet box in his hand. That's when I completely lost it. I started bawling uncontrollably, and before Nick could finish asking me to marry him, I said, "Yes, yes, yes." And all the dancers on the barge began cheering like crazy.
That's the coolest proposal I've ever heard, Samantha gushed, wiping the tears from her eyes. When she had first heard about what had happened to Rachel in Singapore, Samantha had been furious with Nick. How could he not have noticed how badly Rachel was being treated? Rachel had moved out of Nick's place immediately after returning from Asia. And Samantha was glad her cousin was rid of him. But as the months passed, and Rachel began to see Nick again, Samantha found herself having a change of heart as well. After all, he had come to Rachel's rescue and sacrificed his relationship with his own family to be with her. He had waited patiently in the wings, giving Rachel all the time she needed to heal. And now they were getting married at long last.
Well done, Nick! We're all looking forward to the big day next month in Montecito, Uncle Ray declared.
We decided to spend a few extra nights at Ojai Valley Inn and Spa,
bragged Auntie Belinda, looking around the table to make sure all the family had heard her. Rachel chuckled to herself, knowing that her other relatives wouldn't even have a clue what Belinda was talking about.
That sounds wonderful. I wish we had the time to do something like that.
We're going to have to wait till the semester ends in May before we go on our honeymoon.
But weren't you and Nick just in China?
Uncle Ray inquired.
Rachel's Auntie Jin tried to make eyes at Ray from across the table, warning him off the topic, while his wife pinched him hard on his left thigh.
Ow!
He let out, before realizing his gaffe. Belinda had told him that Rachel and Nick had been to Fuzhou again, chasing yet another false lead in the search for her father. But this apparently was another in a long list of family secrets he wasn't supposed to talk about.
Yes, we made a short trip,
Nick answered quickly.
Well, you two are brave souls. I, for one, cannot stomach any of the food over there. I don't care how gourmet they say the food has gotten. All their animals are loaded with carcinogens. And look at this duck you're all eating. I bet it was fed with growth hormones, too.
Auntie Belinda scoffed as she gnawed on her turnip.
Rachel stared at the plump roast duck with its glossy amber sheen, suddenly losing her appetite.
Yes, you can trust the food in Hong Kong, but not anywhere on the mainland,
Auntie Jin said, deftly removing every bit of fat from her roast duck with her chopsticks.
That's just not true, Samantha argued. Why are you guys still so prejudiced against China? When I was there last year, I had some of the best meals of my life.
You really haven't had good xiaolongbao until you've eaten it in Shanghai.
Dumplings filled with meat and piping hot broth that, due to their increased popularity in recent years on the international food scene, have been scalding uninitiated mouths around the world.
At the end of the table, Great Auntie Louise, the oldest member of the Chu clan, suddenly blurted out,
Rachel, what news of your father? Have you found him yet?
Cousin Dave spat out a half-chewed piece of barbecued pork in surprise. The dining room fell silent, a few people exchanging furtive glances. Rachel's face clouded over a bit. She inhaled deeply before responding.
No, we haven't found him.
Nick grasped Rachel's hand and added encouragingly, We thought we had a very interesting prospect last month, but that didn't pan out.
Things can be very tricky over there,
Uncle Ray mused, trying for one more jumbo shrimp fritter, but finding his hand smacked away by his wife.
At least we are certain now that Rachel's father changed his name, because all official documentation of him stops in 1985, shortly before he graduated from Beijing University, Nick explained.
Speaking of universities, does everyone know that Penny Shi's daughter, who was the class valedictorian at Los Gatos, didn't get into any of the Ivy League schools that she applied to?
Auntie Jin chirped, trying to change the subject. It was so dreadful to bring up Rachel's father in front of Carrie, Rachel's mother, who had already suffered enough over the past 3 decades as a single parent. Cousin Henry, ignoring his Auntie Jin's remark, chimed in, volunteering.
You know, my firm works with this amazing lawyer based out of Shanghai. Her father is very high up in the government, and she's super well connected. Do you want me to see if she can help out?
Carrie, who had been silent until now, suddenly slammed her chopsticks onto the table and said,
Hiya! This is all such a waste of time. It's no use chasing ghosts.
Rachel looked at her mother for a moment. Then she got up from the table and walked out of the room without a word. Samantha spoke up, her voice cracking a little with emotion.
He's not a ghost, Auntie Carrie. He's her father, and she has a right to have some sort of relationship with him. I can't even imagine what my life would be like without my dad. Can you blame Rachel for wanting to find him?
Chapter 3, Scots Road, Singapore, February 9, 2013.
When you get here, just drive straight up to the garage,
Bao Xiaoyan told Eleanor over the phone.
Eleanor did as she was instructed, pulling up to the security booth and explaining that she was paying an after-dinner visit to the Baos, who had recently rented a unit in this brand-new condominium off Scots Road.
Ah, yes, Mrs. Young. Please keep to the left and follow the arrows,
the attendant in the dark gray uniform said. Eleanor drove down the ramp into a spotless underground parking garage that seemed curiously devoid of cars.
They must be one of the first tenants to move in, she thought,
veering to the left and approaching a white metallic garage door with a sign overhead that read, Unit 01, Mechanized Car Park, for residents only. The door rose quickly and a green signal light began to flash. As she pulled forward into the brightly lit chamber, a digital sign in front of her flashed. Stop. Parking position okay.
How strange. Am I just supposed to park right here?
Suddenly, the ground began to move. Eleanor gasped and grabbed hold of the steering wheel reflexively. Only after a few seconds did she realize she had driven onto a rotating platform that was slowly pivoting her car 90 degrees. When the car stopped turning, the entire floor began to rise.
For heaven's sake, it's a drive-in elevator.
To her right was a wall of windows, and as the elevator continued to ascend, the full glory of Singapore's nighttime skyline unfurled below her.
This high-tech apartment must be Carlton's idea, Eleanor thought. Since meeting Bao Xiaoyan in London last September, she had come to know the family well.
Eleanor and her friends had lent their support to Xiaoyan and her husband, Gao Liang, during those tense few weeks when Carlton was in and out of surgeries at St. Mary's Paddington. And as soon as he was out of danger, it was Eleanor who suggested that he complete his recuperation in Singapore rather than Beijing.
The climate and air quality will be much better for him, and we have some of the best physical therapists in the world. I'm related to all the top doctors in Singapore, and I'll make sure Carlton gets the best treatment, she had urged,
and the Baos thankfully concurred. Of course, Eleanor did not reveal the true motive behind her altruism. Having them close by would allow her to find out everything she could about the family. Eleanor knew plenty of overindulged sons, but never had she met one with a mother so wrapped around his finger. Xiaoyan had flown three maids down from Beijing to assist in Carlton's care, but still insisted on doing practically everything for Carlton herself. And since arriving in Singapore last November, they had inexplicably moved three times. Daisy Fu had done what she considered to be a special favor for the Baos, and using her family connections had secured them a Valley Wing suite at the Shangri-La at a very discounted rate. But Carlton had for some reason been dissatisfied with one of Singapore's top hotels. The Baos soon moved into a furnished apartment at Hilltops, the luxurious high-rise on Leonie Hill. And a month later, they switched again to an even swankier pad off Grange Road. And now, here they were in this building with the ridiculous car elevator. Eleanor remembered reading about this place in the property section of Business Times. It was the first luxury condo in Asia to boast biometrically controlled car elevators and ensuite sky garages in every apartment. Only expats on could-give-a-damn-expense accounts or mainlanders with too much money would want to live in a place like this. Carlton, obviously in the latter category, had gotten exactly what he wanted. 50 levels up, the ground finally came to a halt, and Eleanor found herself peering into a sprawling living room. Xiaoyan stood on the other side of a glass wall, waving at her, with Carlton, in a wheelchair, by her side.
Welcome, welcome, Xiaoyan said excitedly as Eleanor entered the apartment.
Alamak, I got the fright of my life. I thought I was getting a vertigo attack when the floor started to turn.
Sorry, Mrs. Young. It was my idea. I thought you'd enjoy the novelty of the car lift, Carlton explained. Xiaoyan gave Eleanor a look of resignation.
I hope you see now why we had to move in here. The handicap van comes right up to this floor, and Carlton can just wheel himself right into the apartment with no fuss.
Yes, very convenient, Eleanor said, not believing for one moment that handicap access played a role in the selection of this apartment. She turned around to look at the gimmicky garage again, but noticed that the wall of glass had turned an opaque shade of white.
Wow, how clever. I thought you'd have to sit in your living room and stare at your car all day. It would be so unfortunate if you drove an old Subaru.
Well, you can stare at your car if you want to, Carlson said, touching the screen on his iPad mini. The wall instantly became transparent again, but this time, special spotlights and mood lighting in the garage made her 12-year-old Jaguar look like it was a museum showpiece.
Eleanor was secretly relieved that her driver, Ahmad, had polished the car the day before.
Imagine how gorgeous a chrome-colored Lamborghini Aventador would look sitting in there, Carlton said, shooting his mother a hopeful look.
You are not getting behind the wheel of another sports car, Xiaoyan said in a huff.
We'll see about that, Carlton muttered under his breath, shooting Eleanor a conspiratorial look. Eleanor smiled back at him, thinking how utterly transformed he seemed. For the first few weeks after he had been moved to Singapore for his rehabilitation, Carlton seemed totally catatonic, barely making eye contact or saying a word to her. But today, the young man in the wheelchair was talking, even joking with her. Maybe they had put him on Zoloft or something.
Xiaoyan steered Eleanor into the formal sitting room, an aggressively modern space with floor-to-ceiling windows and backlit onyx walls. A mainland Chinese maid entered, carrying a tray groaning with an elaborate Flora Danica tea service that Eleanor privately judged incongruous with the rest of the decor.
Come, come, have some tea. You are so nice to spend time with us on New Year's Eve when you should be with your husband, Xiaoyan said graciously.
Well, Philip doesn't arrive until late tonight. Our family doesn't celebrate New Year's until tomorrow. Speaking of husbands, is Gao Liang around?
You just missed him. He had to fly back to Beijing. There are so many official functions he has to attend over the next few days.
How unfortunate. Well, you'll have to save some of these for him, Eleanor said as she handed Xiaoyan a large plastic OG shopping bag.
Oriental Garments, better known as OG, is a homegrown department store chain established in 1962, offering value-for-money apparel, accessories, and household items. It's the go-to place for old-money Singaporean ladies of a certain generation who claim that they only wear Hanro underwear, but secretly buy all their discount Triumph bras and panties there.
Oh, you really shouldn't have.
Xiaoyan reached into the bag and began to take out half a dozen different containers.
Now, what are all these delicious-looking confections?
Just some traditional New Year goodies made by my mother-in-law's cooks. Pineapple tarts, love letters, almond cookies, and assorted nonya cakes.
This is so nice of you. Xie xie.
Mandarin, for thank you.
Wait a minute. I have something for you,
Xiaoyan said, scurrying off to another room. Carlton eyed the desserts.
Awfully nice of you to bring all these treats, Mrs. Young. Which one should we try first?
I would start with something not too sweet, like the kueh bangkit almond cookies, and work your way up to the pineapple tarts,
Eleanor advised. She studied Carlton's face for a moment. The scar on his left cheek was just a faint hairline now, and it actually added a dash of roguish charm to his boringly perfect cheekbones. He was a handsome young chap, and even after all the reconstructive surgery, still resembled Rachel Chu so closely that it was rather disconcerting to look at him at times. Thankfully, his posh English accent, which reminded her so much of Nikki's, was much more attractive than Rachel's absurd American drawl.
Mind if I share a secret with you, Mrs. Young? Carlton suddenly whispered.
Of course, Eleanor said.
Carlton peered over at the hallway for a moment to see if his mother was approaching, and then slowly he lifted himself up from the wheelchair and took a few tentative steps.
You're walking now,
Eleanor exclaimed in astonishment. Shh! Not so loud, Carlton said, sitting down in his wheelchair again. I don't want my mother to see this until I can walk clear across the room. My PT thinks I'll be walking normally again within a month and running by this summer.
Oh my goodness! I'm so happy for you, Eleanor said.
Xiao Yan re-entered the room.
What's all the excitement? Did Carlton tell you about his mother coming to visit?
No, Eleanor replied, her interest piqued.
She's not my girlfriend, Mother, Carlton said.
Okay, Carlton's friend is coming to visit us next week,
Xiao Yan clarified. Carlton let out an embarrassed groan.
Ayah, Carlton is so handsome and so smart. Of course he would have a friend. Too bad. I had so many eligible pretty girls line up to guys you.
Cantonese for to introduce, Eleanor said mischievously. Carlton blushed a little. Do you like the view, Mrs. Young? He said, trying to change the subject.
Yes, it's very nice. You know, you can see my apartment from here, Eleanor said. Really? Which one is it?
Xiao Yan said with interest, going up to the window. They had been in Singapore for 3 months now, and she found it a bit curious that Eleanor had never once invited them over.
It's the one on top of that hill over there. Do you see the tower that looks like it's built on top of that old mansion? Yes, yes.
Which floor are you on? Carlton asked.
I have the penthouse.
Wicked. We tried to get the penthouse here, but it was already taken, Carlton bragged.
This is big enough, don't you think? Don't you have the whole floor?
Yes, it's 3,500 square feet, with 4 bedrooms.
My goodness, you must be paying an arm and a leg in rental fees.
Well, we decided to buy the place rather than pay rent on it, Carlton said with a satisfied grin.
Oh,
Eleanor said, surprised. Yes, and now that we've moved in, we like it so much that we've decided to buy the floors above and below and create a triplex.
No, no, we're just thinking about it,
Xiao Yan cut in quickly.
What do you mean, Mother? We signed the contract 2 days ago. There's no backing out now.
Xiao Yan pursed her lips tightly before catching herself and forcing a smile. She was obviously uncomfortable that her son had said so much. Eleanor tried to put her at ease. Xiao Yan, I think you've made a very wise decision. Prices in this district will always go up. Singapore properties are becoming even more sought after than New York, London, or Hong Kong. That's exactly what I told Mother, Carlton said. Xiao Yan said nothing, but reached over to pour a cup of tea for Eleanor. Eleanor smiled as she took the tea, while the adding machine in her brain began to do its work. In such a prime location, this flat must easily have cost the Bows $15 million, probably more with the Sky Garage, and now it turns out that they bought 2 more floors. With Eddie Cheng as their private banker, Eleanor assumed the Bows had to be loaded, but apparently she had underestimated how loaded. Daisy Fu had been right all along. Shortly after meeting Xiao Yan in London, Daisy had theorized.
I bet these Bows are richer than God. You have no idea how wealthy all these mainlanders have become. It seems like yesterday Peter and Annabel Lee were the first mainland billionaires, and now there are hundreds. My son tells me that China will have more billionaires than America within 5 years.
Mr. Wong, the trusty private investigator Lorena had connected her to, had been crisscrossing China for the last few months, trying to dig up every piece of dirt on the Bows. And now Eleanor was even more anxious to read his dossier. After Carlton and Xiao Yan had made a respectable dent in the New Year desserts, Xiao Yan handed a large red and gold shopping bag to Eleanor.
Here, just a small token for you to celebrate the holiday. 新年快乐!
Happy New Year, in Mandarin.
Aiya, no need la. What's this? Eleanor said, pulling out an instantly recognizable orange and brown trimmed box from the shopping bag. Lifting the cover, she saw that the box contained a Hermes Birkin bag.
Do you like it? I know you tend to wear neutral colors, so I got you the white Himalayan Nile crocodile,
Xiaoyan explained. Eleanor knew that this handbag, dyed in the chocolate beige and white tones of a Himalayan cat, had to cost at least $100,000.
Alamak, this is far too lavish. I can't accept this. It's just a small token, really,
Xiaoyan said demurely.
I appreciate the gesture, but I cannot accept it. I know how much these things cost. You should be saving this for yourself.
No, no, too late,
Xiaoyan said as she unfastened the buckle and lifted up the front flap of the handbag. Embossed on the leather were Eleanor's initials, E-Y. Eleanor sighed.
This is too much. I must pay you for this.
No, no, do not insult us. This is nothing compared to all the kindness you have shown us over the past few months.
You don't know what I'm really up to, Eleanor thought. She turned to Carlton and said,
Help me out here. This is outrageous.
It's really no big deal, Carlton said.
It is a big deal. You know I can't possibly accept such a generous gift from your mother.
Carlton scoffed. Come, Mrs. Young. Let me show you something. He wheeled himself out of the sitting room, beckoning Eleanor to follow. At the end of the hallway, he opened the door to one of the guest bedrooms and turned on the light. Eleanor peered into the room. It was sparsely furnished, but almost impossible to walk into. Covering the entire floor were Hermes bags and matching boxes, and displayed on top of each box was a Birkin or Kelly handbag, in every color of the rainbow, in every possible variation of exotic leather. Along every wall were custom-built cabinets that displayed rows and rows of Hermes handbags, all illuminated by soft accent lights. There were more than 100 handbags in the room, and the calculator in Eleanor's brain started going into overdrive.
This is my mother's gift room. She's giving an Hermes to every single doctor, nurse, and physical therapist at Camden Medical Center who's helped me over the past few months.
Eleanor stared at all the handbags crammed into the room, her mouth agape.
My mother has one weakness, and now you know what it is, Carlton said with a laugh.
Xiaoyan proceeded to show Eleanor some of the most unique Hermes bags, customized just for her. Privately, Eleanor felt it was a gigantic waste of money.
Think how many Noble Group or Capital Land shares she could buy instead.
But publicly, she made a show of oohing and aahing over the bags. Eleanor thanked them again for the lavish gift and prepared to depart. Carlton rolled over to the entrance foyer and said,
Take the elevator this time, Mrs. Young. I'll send your car down by itself, and it will be waiting for you when you reach the lobby.
Oh, thank you so much, Carlton. I was thinking I might have a panic attack if I had to go in that car elevator again. Xiaoyan and Carlton waved goodbye at the elevator vestibule. The doors closed, but instead of going down immediately, there was an unusual pause. On the other side of the door, Eleanor heard Carlton let out a sudden yell.
Ow! Ow! That one really hurt, Mother. What have I done?
Baiche,
Mandarin for idiot.
How dare you tell Eleanor Young so much about business? Have you learned nothing?
Xiaoyan screamed in Mandarin. Then the elevator began its rapid descent, and Eleanor could hear no more. Chapter 4 Rideout Road, Singapore. From Astrid Teo, astridleongteo@gmail.com. Date, February 9, 2013 at 10:42 p.m. To Charlie Wu, charles.wu@wumicrosystems.com. Subject, HNY.
Hey you, just wanted to wish you a happy new year.
I got home from the annual Yi Sang dinner with my in-laws. Eaten during Chinese New Year in Singapore, Yi Sang, or raw fish, consists of a huge plate piled with raw fish, shredded pickled vegetables, and a variety of spices and sauces. On cue, the diners at the table stand and toss the ingredients in the air with their chopsticks, while wishing each other prosperity and abundance. Known as the prosperity toss, the belief is that the higher you toss, the higher your fortunes will grow. And I suddenly remembered the year I came over to your house for the dish. And one of the ingredients was 24-carat gold leaf shavings. I remember telling my mum about it, knowing it would scandalize her. Goodness gracious, those Wus have run out of ways to spend their money, so now they're literally eating it, was what she had to say. Apologies for not writing in a while, but these past few months have been rather insane. I've become a working girl of sorts. I'm now involved with the Fine Arts Museum, helping behind the scenes with some strategic Nick space acquisitions as the museum expands. Please keep all this to yourself. They wanted to officially make me a trustee or name a wing for me, but I declined both. No desire to see my name carved into a wall. I actually think it's kind of morbid. Speaking of acquisitions, Michael's new company has been on a tear. He bought two US-based tech startups last year, giving me an excuse to accompany him on a couple of trips to California to visit my brother. Alex and Salima now have three kids and live in a lovely home in Brentwood. This year, my mom finally agreed to come with me to LA to meet her grandchildren. Dad still refuses to acknowledge Salima and those kids. Of course, Mom fell in love with them. They are adorable. The same cannot be said for Cassian, who's been more than a handful. I made it through the terrible twos, but no one told me about the terrible fives. You ought to count your lucky stars that you have girls. We are now trying to decide whether to hold him back another year before he starts primary school at ACS. Of course, Michael doesn't think he should go to ACS at all, and wants him to go to an international school. What do you think of that? Also, in October, we moved to a new house on Rideout Road. Yes, finally. Although it didn't take much to convince Michael to leave our little flat now that he could buy a house with his own money. It's one of those lovely Cary Hill-designed bungalows from the 1990s. Classic tropical modern, built around three courtyards with reflecting pools, etc. We hired a young local architect who had apprenticed with Peter Zumthor to do some updating, and a fantastic Italian landscape designer to make the grounds less Bali and more Sardinia. Yes, I'm still inspired by our trip to Cala di Volpe all those years ago. So, of course, moving and setting up the new house became a full-time job, even though I supposedly had a whole design team at my disposal. But guess what? We're already outgrowing 9,000 square feet as Michael has become addicted to collecting historical artifacts and vintage Porsches. What was supposed to be our downstairs living room is now practically a car showroom. Can you believe it? 2 years ago, I couldn't even convince my husband to buy a new suit. Anyway, how are you? I saw you on the cover of Wired last month. So proud of you. How are the girls? How's Isabel? From your last email, it sounded like the two of you are in a really great place. What did I tell you? A week in the Maldives with no phones or Wi-Fi will reinvigorate any marriage. If you're coming to Singapore this year, please let me know. I'll give you a tour of my new car dealership. XOA. From Charlie Wu. charles.wu@wumicrosystems.com. Date, February 10, 2013, at 1:29 a.m. To Astrid Teo, astridleongteo@gmail.com. Subject, regarding HNY. Hi, Astrid. The museum work is perfect for you. I've always thought you'd make a great force in the cultural scene. Glad you finally have a home with enough room to swing a cat. Not sure if you'd consider me lucky these days. my younger one, Delphine, has become an exhibitionist. The other day, she stripped off all her clothes and ran around Lane Crawford for 10 minutes before the nannies caught her. I suspect they were too busy shopping the pre-New Year sale to notice. And her older sister, Chloe, 7, is going through a major tomboy phase. She found my old Northern Exposure DVDs and for some reason has fallen in love with the show, even though I think she's too young to get any of it. She now wants to be either a bush pilot or a sheriff. Isabel is not at all happy about this, but at least she's much happier with me these days. Happy Year of the Snake to you and your family. Regards, Charlie. This message and any attached documents contain information from Wu Microsystems or its subsidiaries and may be confidential and or privileged. If you are not the intended recipient, you may not read, copy, distribute, or use this information. If you have received this transmission in error, please notify the sender immediately by reply email and then delete this message. From Astrid Teo, astridleongteo at gmail.com. Date, February 10, 2013 at 7:35 a.m. 2. Charlie Wu, charles.wu at wumicrosystems.com. Subject, regarding, HNY.
God, I remember how we used to binge on Northern Exposure back in our London days. I was totally obsessed with John Corbett. Wonder what he's up to these days.
Remember that idea you had, inspired by Adam the chef's stint at the Brick? You wanted to find an old truck stop diner in the middle of nowhere, on some desolate road in the Orkney Islands or Canada's Northwest Territories, and hire a genius chef who'd apprentice in the best restaurants in Paris to work there. We'd serve the most exquisite, innovative food, but we would not redecorate the place one bit and still serve on the old plastic diner plates and charge diner prices. I would be the waitress and wear only Anne de Mueller-Meester, and you would be the bartender and serve only the finest single malt scotches and the rarest wines. But we'd scrape off all the labels so no one would know. People would just stumble in every once in a while by accident and be treated to the best food in the world. I still think it's a brilliant idea.
Don't worry too much about your daughters. I think nudism is a beautiful thing in children. But maybe you ought to send her to Sweden for the summer. And my cousin Sophie went through a tomboy phase too. Oh, wait a minute. She's over 30 now, and I've still never seen her in makeup or a skirt. Oops.
XOA. P.S.
What's up with your increasingly minimalist responses? Your last few emails have been painfully short compared to my tomes. If I didn't know how busy and important you are taking over the world, I would start to get offended.
From Charlie Wu, charles.wu at wumicrosystems.com. Date, February 10, 2013 at 9:04 a.m. To Astrid Teo, astridleongteo at gmail.com. Subject, HNY. John Corbett has been living with Bo Derek since 2002. I think he's doing just fine. Regards, C. P.S. I'm not taking over the world. Your husband is. I've been busy on a hunt to find a genius chef who is willing to live in Patagonia and cook for 6 customers a month. Chapter 5. Tyersal Park, Singapore, Chinese New Year, morning. 3 Mercedes S-Class sedans in the identical shade of iridium silver bearing license plate numbers Tan 01, Tan 02, and Tan 03 idled in the morning traffic on their way to Tyersal Park. In the lead car, Lillian May Tan, matriarch of the family with the surname so unabashedly flaunted on its vehicles, peered out at the red and gold Chinese New Year decorations that assaulted every facade along Orchard Road. Every year, the decorations seemed to get more and more elaborate and less tasteful.
What in God's name is that?
Seated in the front passenger seat, Eric Tan studied the 10-story LED billboard flashing an epileptic seizure-inducing animation and let out a chuckle. Grandma, I think it's supposed to be a red snake entering some, golden tunnel.
It's a curious-looking snake,
Eric's new wife, Evie, commented in her high-pitched voice. Lillian May refrained from mentioning what she thought the engorged creature with the flared head resembled, but it reminded her of something she had seen a long time ago when her late husband, bless his soul, took her to a most peculiar live show in Amsterdam.
We should have taken Clemenceau Avenue. Now we're stuck in all this Orchard Road traffic, Lillian May said, fretting.
Ayah, no matter which way we go, it's going to be jammed up,
her daughter Geraldine said. Beginning on the first day of the Chinese New Year, Singaporeans participate in a most unique ritual. All over the island, people frantically dash around to the homes of family and friends to offer New Year greetings, exchange ang paos, and gobble down food.
Hokkien for red packet. These red envelopes, embossed in gold, are stuffed with cold, hard cash and are given out during Chinese New Year by married couples to single people, especially children, for good luck.
Amounts vary according to the giver's income bracket, but it is safe to say that the minimum amount in more affluent households is $100. By the end of the week, most kids make up with thousands of dollars, and for some, their entire allowances for the year depend on this ritual. In another departure from tradition, the ang paos at Tyersal Park were made of a pale pink vellum and always contained a nominal but symbolic amount. This explains the generations of children taken to Tyersal Park every New Year who would blurt out in disappointment,
"Ganina, only $2 inside."
The first 2 days of the New Year are most crucial, and a strict protocol is observed as people arrange their visits in specific order of seniority, paying respects to the oldest, most esteemed, and usually richest relatives first. Adult children not living at home are expected to visit their parents. Younger siblings have to visit each of their older siblings in descending order of age. Second cousins twice removed visit first cousins once removed. And after spending all day driving around the city paying tribute to the paternal side, they have to repeat the whole process the next day on the maternal side.
If your parents were divorced and remarried, or you came from one of those families where grandpa had taken multiple wives and sired multiple families, you were totally fucked.
In large families, the whole affair would often involve complicated Excel flowcharts, ang pao tracking apps, and plenty of Russian vodka to dull the migraine-inducing confusion of it all. The Tans prided themselves on always being the first to arrive at Tyersal Park on New Year's Day. Even though these descendants of the 19th-century rubber tycoon Tan Hua Wei were third cousins to the Youngs, and technically not supposed to be the first visitors, they had established a tradition of showing up promptly at 10 a.m. since the 1960s. Mainly because Lillian May's late husband did not want to miss out on rubbing shoulders with all the VVIPs who tended to show up early. As the convoy of vehicles finally reached Tyersal Avenue and made its way up the private gravel road of the sprawling estate, Geraldine gave Evie a last-minute crash course on her new relatives.
Now, Evie, be sure to greet Sui in Hokkien like I instructed you, and don't address her unless you are spoken to first.
Okay,
Evie nodded, gaping at the elegant colonnade of palm trees leading to the most majestic house she had ever seen, getting more nervous by the second. And just avoid making eye contact with her Thai ladies in waiting. Great Auntie Sui always has these two maids standing by her side who will give you the evil eye, Eric remarked.
Oh, God.
Ayah, stop scaring the poor girl, Lillian May scoffed.
As the family emerged from their cars and prepared to enter the house, Geraldine whispered a final warning to her mother.
Remember, do not bring up Nikki again. You almost caused Auntie Sui to have a stroke last year when you asked where he was.
What makes you think Nikki won't be here this year?
Lillian May asked as she crouched down by the Mercedes side mirror to rearrange the elaborate wisps of hair cascading down her neck. Geraldine glanced around quickly before continuing.
Aiyah, you don't even know the latest. Monica Lee